Hi there, friends. This is Armand DeMel with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. In my studio here up on 57th Street, there hangs a Haitian flag. Flag from Haiti, because I've been very touched by Haiti and the people in the Haitian Republic. And it's one of the things that I've always thought to myself, and I think over and over again about the strength, the fortitude, the ability of Haitian people to survive things. Here we are, probably the second largest earthquake ever to hit, other than maybe China, with thousands and thousands and thousands of people dead and devastated already. What's it like? It rips at my heart. I'm sure it rips at yours as well. Many people could objectify it and just say, you know, well, it's over there, it's Haiti. You know, everything always goes wrong in Haiti. What do you expect? But there is a thing to it. There is a thing that it seems to be the place where we bleed. The aid, the help that could go there in any form, anything you could do, my friend, anything you could do has meaning. Because right now with the guards there and with the different governments there, the aid that is being sent down is being watched, and watched in such a way that it's not being tossed off to the black market, which it so frequently does. It's being watched in a way that the services will get to the people who need them right now. Trouble with most of, I believe, what's happened in Haiti is that every time you've ever tried to do anything, it's been interfered with by people who are just basically going to take whatever comes in and black market it if possible. And I also think Haiti was a big protection of a long drug conduit that happens through the island, you know. So keep it dysfunctional, keep the people down. Right now, it's real. Right now, it's busted open. And right now we have to do what we can. And I'm sad. I'm sad. I'm sad to hear it. I'm sad. Don't run away from it. Don't run away from it, I suggest, because I suggest a part of you opens up if you take a look. And look at the photographs. I want you to see the faces of people who survive this and who get through this, who have had enough distress in their lives that they see more and more. And the more you pound on them, you know, the more you could see it in their structures, but they are people who are my heroes in many ways because they get through more and more. I've been talking to you about Gestalt therapy. I brought an issue to you about Gestalt therapy because in my early life, in my early training, one of my sponsors was a man named Dr. Peter Hogan, a psychiatrist. And he was a teacher of Gestalt therapy, G-E-S-T-A-L-T. I like Gestalt therapy. I like it because as a form of therapy, what it does is it addresses some very human issues and addresses them in a way that makes you take ownership, is what it's called, and take responsibility for the way the world is. We all seem to function. A woman came to me the other day and she told me about how she usually goes out with mostly married men. And I said to her, what makes you choose that? But I was trying to figure it out. And she told me the story about how as a child, her dad had a relationship with someone other than his wife. The daughter had found out and she outed her father. She kind of told mom about it. As a result of it, it seems that Dad left the home, and she felt very resentful because she missed Dad. She didn't want him to leave the home. Now, what does she do in later life? Later life, almost all of her relationships are dating married men. And I said to her, I said, it seems like you wanted to become the woman that your father was looking for outside of the relationship with your mother, that your dad was looking on the outside, and you have tried to become it. Now, this may sound far-fetched and analytical, But I've heard enough stories about people who have seen their fathers looking at magazines like Playboy or something, and they aspire to become a Playboy model, or people who are looking to become in the arts so that they could get admired and get the love from a parent that's been missing. Well, Gestalt therapy talks about this as unfinished business. They say that in our lives is an unfinished business that deals with things that we as individuals have neglected. They have not met their own needs, have not followed on through certain situations, or have feelings bottled up inside which are not expressed. When a person is said to have unfinished business, they store it away in the subconscious, was the idea. Now, wherever that is, nowadays with these new maps of the brain, I don't know, because we could find out it's probably in your pancreas or in some other part of your body that you've never even considered. And they want to keep these unfinished business out of view. But if you could imagine, if as a child you were beaten with a strap, as many kids I know have been, by belts. You have an aversion to belts, and you don't know why. You don't like belts. Belts scare you or fascinate you, one or the other, but you don't know why. But it may have to go back to the early punishment. Unfinished business. Unfinished business, when you leave it unattended, will play itself out in one's interactions with the environment in situation after situation. If you couldn't get loved by your mother, you keep looking for your mother to love you. If you couldn't feel important as a child, you keep looking for yourself to be important. This is called unfinished business. And the object of Gestalt process and therapy was to uncover the unfinished business. So you can kind of find out, what's this drama that you're fighting? What's this all about? Why are you doing it so hard? Well, this is Armand Demuth with you in The Positive Mind. In order to do this, I want to continue with some of the defenses that people use to keep themselves stuck in their early childhood drama, repeating their unfinished business in drama after drama. I mean, didn't you ever get the feeling that you dig a hole, you fill it up, and then you dig the same hole and you fill it up, and then you dig the same hole and you fill it up, and then eventually you plant a flower, and the flower grows. And you say to yourself, it's a good thing I dug that hole and filled it up three times, I turned the soil. But meanwhile, you could have just put the flower in the soil anyway. Why do we put so much effort and so much stress into things that seem to have no meaning? Well, the object is because, according to beliefs, we're trying to protect ourselves from changing. And so we want to protect ourselves from being any different than the way we are. Because this concept of whatever I am is I survive this way, so I may as well stay this way. I may as well just be who I am because I did survive this way. And there's a lot of truth to that. You know, I was told a story, I'm sure, but I met a much older man who thought he was Napoleon. And his family said to me, should we unmask his fantasy? And I said, why do it? The man's in his late 80s. He doesn't have long to live. Look at his health. Unmask him now and he has to deal with reality, which is going to be very, very big. Leave him alone. Let him be Napoleon for a little while longer. But of course, if you're young and you're vibrant, and you want to live your life, or if you have children who are looking forward to you, looking to you and say looking up to you and say, you know, hey, Daddy, show me the way in some way or other. How do you want to be? How do you want to be? Do you want to be somebody who scares your children into being afraid? Or do you want to be somebody who could be strong enough and proud enough to be out there in the world so that your child can grow up, move past you, and go further? One of the defenses that people use is called retroflexion. Let me get that for you. Retroflexion. Here's a new word, I'm sure, to many of you. It's a process where what naturally to be directed at someone or something in the environment is directed inward. Something you feel towards somebody on the outside, you direct towards the inside, and usually it's a negative emotion. A person feels angry with another person but never expresses the anger outwardly. Rather, he or she that directs the anger at themselves. In fact, they usually blame themselves for having gotten angry in the first place. That's retroflexion. This is a sure path to depression. People who are depressed always retroflect. They blame themselves. Second, deflection. Deflection is demonstrated by the avoidance of your environment and your emotions. And a person could become very, very, you can become so used to deflection that you can become really pathological. It could get really disturbing. And you'd start talking in things in the abstract or in the third person. Now, people who do this very often seek to avoid anything that's first person. And here's the way they talk. Well, when one walks along life, one finds. Now, you very often heard me on radio when talking to people who call in. You'll hear me, Armand DeMille, saying to them, well, who are you talking about? Well, they'll say, well, like when you meet somebody for the first time, I said, are you talking about me? And they say, no, I'm talking about me. I said, so use the word I. And you find that they're very reluctant to use the word I. People who are reluctant to use the word I are deflectors. Another version of deflectors is blame. When you take away the word I and you replace it with you. So what you do is now every time you feel something or you have an emotion, you blame somebody else for having caused it. These are both forms of deflection. Another form of deflection is when a person uses the word it. Well, it feels warm in here. As opposed to saying, I feel warm in here. But the indication when you hear a person say, it feels warm in here, is that person does not want to talk about themselves. They're avoiding themselves. So people will say that, or they'll talk in a third-person perspective, right? You know, when one gets angry, one tends to throw things. Is third-person, you know, one, generalizing. These are things that you notice in people, and you notice, if you're a therapist, you pursue it. You go into it. You say to the person, listen, you're not talking about yourself. Most therapists would do that. Some wouldn't. Some don't even know about it. Some people do it. Some therapists are out there doing the very same things as they talk. Because, for example, we have a thing in Gestalt therapy that you never kind of say anything caused anything. You know, you don't say why. So, for example, if you say to yourself, I'm hot because it's warm in here. In Gestalt therapy, you would say, I'm hot and it's warm in here. You would make a statement of both things existing at the same time that may or may not be impacting on each other, but you try not to attribute to any one thing a cause. You don't make it the cause because for all we know, you're going through menopause too. You know, it may not be warm in here. It may be something else. So when you're talking about trying to, what they say, own a feeling, you're trying to always take it to the I. You're trying to say I or me. Talk about yourself. Don't talk about the other person. Except when we get to the phrase, which is called another form of defense, which is called confluence. Now, this is Armand DeMille. If you just tuned in, I'm continuing in my discussion about Gestalt therapy in which I was trained. Not that I practice nowadays. I practice it in my mind, you know. It's always going off in my mind, little aspects of it, beliefs in it. But I thought I'd bring you some of the tenets of it. There's one called confluence. Now, confluence. You know the people who say, just go with the flow? That's really a person very often who has no sense of who they really are or what they are not. So they go with the flow. Confluence is the absence of a boundary between yourself and what's around you. People who are confluent have trouble identifying boundaries between themselves and other people and ultimately have trouble identifying even their own needs. Their perspective becomes skewed and no figure can easily be rendered. Confluent individuals also tend to have a poor definition of themselves and tend to have little life, a little enthusiasm for life. A combination of excitement and awareness are necessary for healthy contact, but in the case of confluence, you don't. You have more of this merger. And it always seems like they're talking about some kind of merger between the two. Hey, a couple of more things which I'll bring you. One is interjection. Now, interjection is an individual's refusal to engage their environment with aggression. It's the failure to meet and act upon the new thing. Quite literally, interjection refers to psychologically swallowed whole concepts. The individual who engages in aggression properly dissembles and assimilates aspects of his or her environment, which leads to the growth of the personality. Aggression. What are we talking about? We're not talking about anger. We're talking about moving into. If instead, when a person engages in introjection, the person's personality cannot develop. They develop a fake self instead. They have no filtration process going on. So another form is to introject, is to take inside, as opposed to allow a normal separation boundary to exist. And lastly, there's projection. Projection is an individual's tendency to project their perceptions and assumptions onto someone else or something in the environment in order to deflect personal responsibility away from themselves. A classic example of that is homophobia. You know, a homophobic individual will look at somebody else and say, he's gay, he's looking at me. That's projection. Because probably what's going on unconsciously is that there's some part of you that's attracted to the other person and that you're projecting onto them these feelings. Or women who frequently say, she's jealous of me, they are jealous of me, is usually a woman who is very jealous and possessive herself. Now, a certain amount of projection is healthy and necessary in our daily lives. But when one frequently makes projections, you can't understand the world you live in. Somehow, you don't get a real difference between what's really yours and what's really on the outside. And this is the kind of person who could even become paranoid. You know, they get to worrying. They project so much their hatred, their anger. They project it on the outside. And it becomes more and more pronounced over time. This is Armand DeMille. Why do I want you to learn this stuff, my friends? So I've taught a number of classes, a number of schools. Some of you out there even attended some of my evening classes at Hunter College, I remember. I've heard from you. I'm excited about people learning about the human mind. I'm excited about WBAI having an avenue, having a venue to present this material through this program. The Positive Mind has been with WBAI for 20 years. 20 years we have been bringing you ideas, concepts, guests, to help that mind of yours just be a little more positive. That's the idea. So the more you learn about people, if it's confusing, you could always go to the website and you could re-listen to the program. Now let's talk about polarities. Polarities are poles of reconcilable conflict in the personality. Two opposites working together in a complementary way. Polarities are rarely perceived as working together by the mind. The individual tends to side with one pole or another. You know, I love her, I hate her. Polarities are often seen as tools to be used in order to promote growth and are not something to be avoided. It's an idea that one pole cannot exist with the other. You know, I can't understand how I want to be top dog, and yet I want them to take care of me. I can't understand it. That's two polarities working together. You can have both working together. Hey, and we're going to take your calls later today, by the way. The telephone number here is 212-209. to 900. But we're first, before we go on with more of this education, which is just a short piece, and then later this afternoon I'm going to talk about this phenomena called disowning the self. I have something else that was sent to me, and I thought I would share this with you. This is a kind of a beautiful moment, all right, I think. Now, in my time, I have received a little too many of those, I have learned, you know, I have learned, or I believe, or what I found out, you know. My favorite expression is, if I knew I was going to live this long, I would have flossed, right? But this is the I Believe series that have gone around. However, recently, someone sent me one, and the way it was said, the way it was presented, it touched me. And I thought I would share this with you. So what I'm going to do is read you one of these things that you happen to get in email all the time and tend to throw away. But you don't have to pass this along. But this one had just a little more value than usual, I think. So I'm going to read one to you, okay? A little break away from our education, and we'll go to your calls later. This one said, I believe. I that believe that because two people argue, it doesn't mean that they don't love each other. And just because they don't argue, it doesn't mean that they do love each other. Second tenet was, I believe that we don't have to change our friends if we understand that friends change. I believe that no matter how good a friend is, they're going to hurt you every once in a while, and you must forgive them for that. But the closer you are, the more frequent the hurts. I believe that you can do something in an instant that will give you a heartache for the rest of your life. And I believe that it's taking me a long time to become the person I want to be. I believe that you can keep going long after you think you can't. And I believe that we're responsible for what we do, no matter how we feel. The buck stops here. I believe that either you control your attitude or your attitude controls you. And there's no excuse, chemical or otherwise, for an uncontrollable attitude. I believe that heroes are the people who do what has to be done when it needs to be done, regardless of the consequences. I believe that money is a lousy way of keeping score. I believe that my best friend and I can do anything or nothing and have the very best time. I also believe that sometimes when I'm angry, I have the right to be angry, but that doesn't ever give me the right to be cruel. I believe that maturity has more to do with the types of experience you've had and what you've learned from them, and less to do with how many birthdays you've celebrated. Yes, my friends, I believe that it isn't always enough to be forgiven by others. Sometimes you have to really make peace with yourself. And I believe no matter how bad your heart has been broken, the world is not going to stop for your grief, nor can you expect it to. I believe that our background and circumstances may have influenced who we are, but from here on in, we become responsible for who we are and what we pass on. And I believe that you shouldn't be so eager to find out a secret, because it could change your life forever. Leave some things to mystery. And I believe two people can look at exactly the same thing and see something totally different. I believe that your life can be changed in a matter of hours by people who don't even know you. And I believe that even when you think you have no more to give, when a friend cries out to you, you'll find the strength to help, no matter how run down you are. And I believe all my credentials on the wall do not make me or anyone else a decent human being. I believe, my friends, that the people that care about you most in life probably will be taken from you too soon. The happiest of people don't necessarily have the best of everything. They just make the most of everything. This is Armand DeMille. Now, why that one? Why that one over the hundreds and thousands that have been sent to me? I don't know. There's some potency in that. Or maybe it's just my moment. You know, here's another thing we learned about music, art, everything else we learn. What do people have as their favorite music, their favorite art, their favorite poetry, their favorite book? We used to think, it was just the best one. But did you ever own a book that you thought was the best book you ever read? And, I love the book Shibumi, S-H-I-B-U-M-I. Shibumi by Nicholas Trevanian. I thought it was just the most fabulous book. But the trouble with Shibumi is when I read it, I was at a certain age and felt a certain way. And here's the way, so I went back to read it. It's still good, but it wasn't what I thought it was. The things that we tend to love the most are usually associated with a condition, a physical, emotional condition that we're in at the moment. So if you have you hear a piece of music on a loving beach with somebody, it can become your favorite music in the world. Usually it's associated with the energy of adolescence. Your favorite music is probably what you heard in adolescence. Your favorite painting probably came somewhere out of your adolescence. You know, most of your favorites came when your life was young, vibrant, and vital. And so that's how you develop your favorites. So your very favorites, you know, are not a matter of judgment. They're a matter of association. We associate, we connect. We connect things with the way we feel. And it is the feelings, my friend, that are vitally, vitally important to be able to identify and see. The object of Gestalt therapy is to be able to identify what you feel when you feel it. And through your feelings, to be able to find out for yourself who you are and who you're not. And I don't believe in most therapy, so I'm not saying you should do it, but I think some of the belief systems of it were really great. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Telephone number here, 212-209-2900. After our break, I'll play a little special music, and then we will take your phone calls. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much.
From the Saint Elsewhere album. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Yeah, crazy, right? Okay, so let's talk. We're just talking about, we're going to take your calls in just a minute. 212-209-2900. I just want to finish one last piece of this that comes from Gestalt Therapy. This is the IU dilemma. You've heard me talk about this often enough. It is impossible to communicate to somebody when you are blaming them. If you are blaming them, there is only one thing that is going to happen. You're going to blame them. They're going to get defensive. They're going to blame you back. It's not going to work. You cannot point your finger at somebody without pointing four fingers at yourself. When you point your finger, when you say you, you cannot solve a problem. Just can't. You must say I. Now, what's the difference? Here's the difference. When you say you are saying to a person that they are a cause of something, but you're not letting them know how vulnerable you felt. So, for example, when you didn't answer the phone, you made me angry. As opposed to, you know, I felt sad when you didn't answer the phone. I felt worried when you didn't answer the phone. I got scared when you didn't answer the phone. See, it's a sequence. It doesn't mean that you're wrong for not answering the phone. I am just trying to report what happened to me. Very often when you talk from the I, as opposed to the you wind up talking about a feeling of vulnerability. I got sad, I got scared, I got this way, you know, I felt myself sinking. Whereas when you're talking about the you, you're always talking about anger. You're always pointing the finger. Now, a good way to do this is if you were to listen to most couples when they argue. Now, couples could argue for any number of things. There may be hormonal sequences that occur over the course of a month between a man and a woman. It could be the man. It could be the woman. The man's juices could get up for one reason or another. Right? It could be addictive process, could be any number of things, but there are times that people fight. And when they have these arguments, some of which are like coffin nails, because each argument has one more wound that you deliver that goes into the person's heart. And when that happens over and over again, here's the way it's characterized. If you were to take a transcript of the recording of the primary person who is causing this argument, you're going to hear the word you 50 times more than you hear the word I. I'm talking about 50 times more. You. And if you become like most of the married men I know who have felt themselves going through this with wives that they have learned to hate over time, as many men I know or who I have seen hate their wives but don't tell them because they don't want to upset the apple cart because they just want to say, well, you know, I'll disown that person. I'll make them. In my mind, they'll have no room whatsoever. So they silently hate their mates. Now, I know that sounds terrible to you, but a lot of people do. Women hate their husbands, but they live with them. It's like having a bad neighbor. Men hate their wives, but they live with them. And the way they do it is whenever they hear the accusations, the you, they placate. They make believe they're listening. They apologize. Basically, they just put another nail in the coffin. So what, whenever you hear you, meaning accusatory you got to back out of it. Now, here's the problem. The problem is when somebody's on an accusatory you attack, you cannot tell them that they are on an accusatory you attack because they won't believe you. They'll just accuse you more. Because you are threatening to go through their defense system, through their aggression into their pain by bringing it to their attention. So you can't say, look, Armand DeMille said if you say you 20 times, then it means that you're whacked. It won't work. You have to get away. You have to find a way to back away from the situation. If you have somebody who cannot control themselves, you have to back away at the moment and hope you can go back to it another time. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. 212-209-2800 is our number here.
2900.
I wanted to see if you were listening, Michael. Give Jennifer all the calls. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
We'll okay. Get, yeah. You must have got tired.
You must have gotten tired from listening. 212-209-2900. Hi, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, could you turn down your radio, please?
Yes.
Thank you.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay, basically what I wanted, you know, I just wanted to mention this. I think it's in keeping with something that you're talking about. Like when you let's say you're walking down the street with your lady, or you're walking into a restaurant or into a movie, and you get jealous because, you know, she comes into the proximity of other people. I just wanted to say that I wound up saying you again.
You did. Did you notice? Did you notice you did that?
Keeping with the deeper,
okay.
You know, how,
okay,
how
but
I
good.
Really,
wait, stop a moment. Stop.
That. Anyway.
Wait. Slow down. You just slow down a little. I know it's hard to hear my voice from where you are, but good that you caught yourself just then. When you are walking down the street with your girlfriend and you see, you get jealous. He's using the word you as opposed to the word I.
No, I meant I.
Now let's start it over using okay. The I, and we'll watch how different it becomes. And what's your name, by the way?
My name is Ronald Toro. I've called
Ronald,
two or
sure.
Three times.
Sure, Ronald. Okay, let's talk yes. About you. What happens?
But I can remember years ago when I was younger, and I'd wind up getting into a disagreement with my girlfriend.
Okay, wait a minute. Now, what happened to the you in the present? You see?
Me in the present?
Yeah, do you walk down the street sometimes with your girlfriend or with somebody, and you get jealous? Does that happen nowadays?
It probably would. I don't have a girlfriend, but the same condition still exists, I'm sure, what I'm trying to mention.
Yeah, sure.
I'm trying to mention that when I get jealous, it's really that I'm seeing the attraction of the other man while I'm walking with my companion, a female.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm afraid that the person is demonstrating greater qualities than I.
Good for
so
you.
I'm the one that's really attracted or made insecure, and then I'm blaming her, like, oh, I seen you looking at that. You know, I'm not saying that I had gone on to that degree, but I've kind of come to see that I am, like you say, projecting the idea that I see my lesser in relation to the other person that comes into the proximity, the restaurant.
Pretty smart thinking. And keep in mind also, Ronald, that it is perfectly natural. Natural meaning that as primitive as we could be, we would be we would be protecting our turf. You know what I mean? So
yes,
in other words, if you what's happened to you though is you're an evolved man. You're a man who says, "Well, I don't want to be acting in that way. I don't want to be that way. I want to be different than that." You know, I want to be different than that. That's great.
Definitely, because it transmits to the puppet companion. Your insecurity is magnified then. There's no value. That's what I'm coming to say, that there's no, I create no value. If I just, you know, understand it as just, you know, not pay it too much attention.
So now you have no girlfriend now. How would you?
No, not really.
How old are you at this point?
I'm very concerned with reaching 70 in a few more, basically a week or two.
And why are you consumed with it?
Say that again?
Why are you consumed with it?
I'll be honest with you. My blood pressure and things like that have been, like, going a little out of whack. And I'm thinking that part of it might be anxiety about reaching this here 70, which for me is like the threshold of older age. You know, you could now say you're older. You're an older man. Well, you could say, I could say, you know, like, nah, you know, I can't do that right now because, you know, hey, I'm old, you know. In other words, like, it gives me an excuse to not have to participate to the degree that I probably deep in my heart would have liked to when I was younger.
Sure. And so, Ronald, what you say at age 70, you say to yourself, you say, oh, boy, people are going to look at me as less and I'm older and the women won't be as attracted to me, is what you're saying, you know? But have you ever done something like gone on Match.com and put out your age there and let people see it? You know,
right now, I'm concerned with upgrading my life and whom I might come across during, you know, in the interim.
Absolutely.
Is fine with me. But I also realize that, you know, a woman, a grown up that has lived life, you know, basically, you know, somewhat successfully, has addressed the realities of life correctly, is it would have to, you know, I'd have to have a little something to offer. So I feel that as a retired person, you know, I'm not saying I don't have none to offer, but I don't know. I guess it could be chemistry that I'm not, you know, but I haven't really given up hope. I still live whatever it is, the fantasy or the thought that I still want to look well for, you know, for life. And that involves a companion, without doubt.
You're a beautiful man. You're a beautiful man. I would like to hear from people both of your age and of people who are, who would consider, you know? If people heard people, I'm not going to put anything together. I'm not going to do a match myself. But send me an email, any of you, especially women out there who would say, you know, here's how this would affect me. Because maybe it's true, maybe it's not. Maybe the age makes a difference. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe the intention of a man like Ronald is what makes a difference. When's your birthday going to be, Ronald?
January 28th.
Okay.
Yeah, today I'm feeling too bad. I just came from the park with my dog, but I have been feeling some symptoms that I actually was, you know, not to go into that, but I have a few things, and you have two stents. You know, the vascular system is a little bit, and that's what I'm hoping gets better.
Oh, screw it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, let it go out of whack. Let yourself die in the streets. Enjoy your life. You know, don't just be protected, because I know so many people who just protect their health. That's all they do is spend their time protecting their health. You know?
My son basically accuses me of exactly that.
Yeah, you know.
You know, he tells me, Pop, that's all you talk about, you know, and this and that.
And you know, that's an important thing you're hearing, Ronald, because if your son, when you start talking about it, that's when you sound old. I was speaking to a young person once who said to me, I don't like to get together with older people. And I said, why? She said, because they always talk about how sick they are. And I said, they talk about the inside of their bodies. So I heard that, and I never opened my mouth again. I never said another word. You keep your frailties to yourself, because the people around you don't necessarily need to hear it, you know, unless you got somebody who's
a really
tight buddy.
I agree with you 100%, Mr. DeMille. No doubt about it.
And call me Armand if I call you Ronald.
It doesn't mean that I do it, though. I mean, I probably just speak about my health because, you know, I don't really know.
Give it up. Talk about something else.
Yeah.
Talk about the beauty in the world. You find something beautiful in this world, and you report on beauty, and you become a beauty reporter. And you walk in the house one day and say, I was walking through the park, and I saw this tree, and this tree had a leaf hanging from it that was the most beautiful leaf I had ever seen. You bring that to your son when you meet him.
That's
the truth. What? I know. I know it's true.
Yeah, because I have the good fortune to live across from a pretty worthy park.
You bring reports of beauty and see how it changes your life. Thank you very much for calling in, Ronald.
Okay,
you're a beautiful man.
All
happy
right.
birthday hey, to
well.
You. 70 is just another number. Just
okay,
another one.
Well, like I say, today I feel like I'm going to make it, but many times I got to wonder.
Yeah,
all
I
right,
know.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye-bye. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Right. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, Armand, glad to listen to your program. I'm Dr. Block, Jack Block. I teach history at William Patterson University in Wayne. And the reason I'm calling, I'd like to share with you my perspective on the word you and I.
Good.
I know what you were saying and why.
Wait a minute, you William Patterson University?
Yeah, I teach history there.
Oh, because there's somebody in the psychology department there who used to be very close to us at WBAI. I'm trying to remember who that was. Good, I'm glad you bring it back to us. But let me hear your perspective.
Well, when I'm talking about life in an earlier history, I tried to get the students to understand how people felt. And I'd say, well, put yourself in their place, you know. What would you have done had you been in Napoleon's position and so on? And I think that helps when I try to give them a feeling of, well, you can, you know, look at it from another person's point of view. And I like to apply that to my own life and people around me. I find when I'm talking to somebody, I like to try to say, well, you really feel down, don't you? Because when I start talking about I feel that way, I feel I lose the person.
Okay, so, but let me give you a little, just a little bit in the middle of that, okay? Now, look, as a history professor, you are by nature an analytical mind. Now, and I mean, you don't even have to go much further, but I know you have that kind of a mind. In fact, you have what they call an abstract sequential mind. You think of many things, sometimes indecisive, but you have this mind that presents it that way. Here's a piece of what you're saying that I'll bring to you. When you speak to someone with compassion, but you give them an analysis of themselves that is below their consciousness, you may think you're getting through, but you're not. What you do instead is you, that may engender a defense, may. What if instead you present it and say, you know, the only part of I you include is you say, you notice I feel sad because I think I'm losing you at the moment because, and then you say, I believe this perception takes place, but you include the I all the time. And I've seen enough people who have been thinkers who like to analyze people and give you offer people some insight that if they include the I, it becomes softer. That's my argument.
I agree with you, but it's just in the sense of empathy that, you know, when you this happens too. If I talk about something, somebody I know very well will interrupt and say, well, I feel this and this and this, and I lose my thought, or
sure,
it may happen. But I think people are so anxious to talk about themselves, and I find sometimes that this is my own feeling that yes, you're right about analysis and analytical thinking, but you know, Armand, sometimes I feel it's necessary for us to be able to put ourselves in the place of another. You know, I think
sure,
you've
so
talked about that.
Can
another.
You tell me? But tell me even there. Tell me if you were Napoleon, sitting on a horse in Russia, what would you be saying as you looked over the field and you realized that you had to withdraw? How would you, in the first person, this is probably what you would do in your class.
Well,
what would you do?
It was very important that I caused this, that I brought almost 1 million men into Russia, and I destroyed practically all. Only about 20, 30,000 came back alive. And I did that
yes,
because of my own selfish desire. I mean, it applies to today when you think of the people.
I know,
dying.
I know, no. But stay with that example. You see, that's a very potent example that you just gave. If he had that kind of insight, you know, one of the things the Gestalt therapist would also say, they'd say, "Be his horse." His horse's name was Nicole. And what do you think Nicole would be saying at that moment if Nicole had a voice?
Gosh, I don't know.
Well, you know, something like, you know, you brought me into this frigid place, and I know you're a great guy and all that stuff, but boy, am I a little annoyed that you got me stuck over here, like with all these soldiers that you got over here. And just for your own cute self, here's a cute thing, that we often heard of the word, you know, the origin of the word pumpernickel comes from a Napoleon story, I believe, where when Napoleon was in Russia, he would ask for bread for his horse, Nicole. And he would say, donne-moi de pain pour Nicole, which meant get me bread for Nicole, my horse. And Pampa Nicole was this Russian black bread that they brought back from Russia to France, sure. which got to be known as Pampa Nicole or Pumpernickel.
Oh, very, I like that. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure, and thank you for calling in.
And keep it up. You do wonders. A wonderful person. Maybe someday we'll meet.
I would like to.
All right.
I would like to.
Take care now.
Right. Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. I'm going to try to grab one more call. Hi there. You're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
How are you, Mr. DeMille?
Good. Call me Armand.
Okay. How are you, Armand?
Good.
I was enjoying the part where you had brought out a little earlier, maybe 15 minutes ago, about how a husband can learn to hate his wife.
Yeah.
Because of different various reasons. And it just kind of hit home for me because I know I've created a lot of turmoil within my household, but in the same light, my wife does not see that it's a two-sided situation. It's everything I do, you know, like you. Just like you said,
Yous. You know what you do when you get in an argument and you're keeping quiet? Just count the number. Don't tell her, but count the number. It helps you. Every time you hear the word you, just tick it off in your mind like you had a little counter with you. And you'd be amazed because it'll save you. You'll say to yourself, see, this is one of those you compulsions, and you don't believe the things. But trying to defend yourself against him, it'll get you into hatred.
Yes, yes. But that's why now you're saying to try to defend myself, I put myself in danger. But in the same light, you're saying you were saying earlier to not say anything.
No, because it's an illness. The you is an illness.
Right.
It's an illness talking. It's not words. It's not real words talking. When somebody's blaming you, they're not getting anywhere. They're not getting anything really done. They just...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, you go. How can what?
Well, how can I get... I've done some counseling on my own, but I've said to her persistently that it's something we need to do together.
Mm-hmm.
And she refused. She doesn't need any help.
Yeah, I understand. So we got to get you a good book. We got to get you something. And one of the things I like is a book called Nonviolent Communication.
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at that. Take a look at the Nonviolent Communication book. Oh, I see that our time is up and we have to be going. But I'll continue with this tomorrow, okay? And if you can, call in tomorrow and we'll talk about it even more.
I'll do that.
You're beautiful. Thank you so much. And call me Armand unless you're going to give me a bill. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Special thanks to WBAI. You can go to WBAI.org and pick up this program if you wanted to listen to it again. Or if we run out of the archives, which is just a few days, go to my website, thepositivemind.com. And you'll see that and a lot of other goodies. Special thanks to Michael for the flawless engineering, as usual. Back with you tomorrow, my friends, at 1 p.m.
I see.